In February 1955, the bulldozers rolled into Sophiatown. To apartheid segregationists, this multiracial suburb, one of the few remaining urban areas where black South Africans were still allowed to own property, was an offence, a black spot that had to be wiped off the map of Johannesburg. Armed with guns and nopkiris, the police began forcing families out of their homes, and soon the large-scale destruction of buildings was underway. Black residents were sent to Meadowlands in Soweto, coloured residents to El Dorado Park, Indian residents to Lanesia. It would be years before all the houses and shops were emptied and flattened, and it was only in 1962 that Sophiatown was renamed Triumph, the cynical, triumphant declaration that this land was now for whites only. In the late 1950s, however, Miriam Makeba and the Skylarks had already famously, mournfully sung, "Sophiatown is gone." Let's connect a few dots. Firstly, yes, you are listening to a Shakespeare podcast. This is the first episode of Season 2 of Shake the Sword, produced by the Tsikinya Shaka Center at the University of the Witwatersrand. I'm your host, Chris Thurman, the director of the TCC, and I'm delighted to be doing this again. It's been a minute. Well, to be fair, it has been a good couple of years since Season 1. If you're new to Shake the Sword, and you're wondering why that's the name of this podcast, or what the TCC is all about, please visit our website, tsikinya-chaga.org. You can say chaka or chaga. It's a loose Setswana translation of, you guessed it, not Shakespeare, but Shake the Sword. Or just listen to some of the episodes from Season 1. Last time round, we explored Shakespeare in translation in East and West Africa. This season, we'll be learning about multilingual Shakespeares in Southern Africa. As you'll have seen from the title of this episode, we're starting with Shakespeare translations into the most widely spoken home language in South Africa, the Nguni language of isiZulu. So, what's the connection to Sophiatown? Stay with me. Zulu was the first African language given a dedicated radio spot by the SABC, the South African Broadcasting Corporation. This began in 1941 when, as historian Liz Gunner describes it in her 2019 book, Radio Soundings, the government's wartime anxieties, quote, created a public media space for isiZulu in a new global medium. Enter K.E. Masinga. His initials stood for King Edward, a teacher who was looking for a new career opportunity and who managed to persuade the suits at the Durban SABC that, quote, airtime in isiZulu was essential as a means of ensuring that the rumours in the black community of an imminent Nazi victory, which began to surface in South Africa during the Russian campaign, were quashed. Masinga was allowed to make brief daily announcements giving updates on the war. But while the odds seemed stacked against him, Gunner notes, he slowly expanded the airtime allocated to isiZulu. In 1943, he and ethnomusicologist Hugh Tracy produced the script of a musical radio drama based on the folktale Chief Above and Chief Below. The recasting of an oral story in the new medium was hugely popular, writes Gunner, particularly with migrant hostel dwellers in Durban, who would listen together and eagerly discuss the radio items. Over the next decade, Masinga became a familiar voice on the airwaves. By the time Radio Bantu was launched in 1960 with isiZulu as its primary broadcast language, he was a national celebrity with the cherished nickname Mangete. As he demonstrates here from an interview recorded towards the end of his career, he would begin each broadcast with an iconic greeting.
Zulu, siyanibingelela mabandla kamjongane kandaba. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that is the way the Zulus are being greeted by their people when they start to address them in any sort of a meeting, which simply means to say that I'm greeting you Zulus on behalf of the early Zulu kings Mjokwane and Ndaba, of whom the Zulus up till this day are very proud. Those were the greatest and the highest Zulu kings before Shaka was born.
In the 1950s, revitalizing a different oral tradition, Masinga undertook the translation of 9 of Shakespeare's plays into isiZulu, adapting them into serialized radio dramas. These were extremely popular in the hospitals and townships of the Witwatersrand. Indeed, Gunner suggests that Masinga contributed to Shakespeare becoming, quote, part of the rhetoric of the streets, in what we now refer to as the Sophiatown era, a period in which, despite increasing apartheid persecution and the introduction of a raft of oppressive laws, urban black culture thrived. Literature, jazz, theatre, alongside political protest. We associated with the drum writers, with musicals like King Kong, with the Freedom Charter and the Women's March, as well as depictions of Tsotsi gangsters and speakeasy shebeens, by turns romanticized and denigrated as signs of poverty or social decay. And in amongst all of this, there was Shakespeare. But it's worth emphasizing, to counteract the kinds of claims that like to make Shakespeare the central feature of any great social, political, or cultural movement, that Shakespeare was only one component of a diverse offering curated by Masinga. Shakespeare was not a priority, not top of the list, but more of a content filler. As Masinga put it,
I translated Shakespeare after I had exhausted all the resources of folktale, Zulu history, Zulu literature, creative stories that I wrote about. I wrote about many subjects in Zulu history and literature, and I wrote some biblical stories. I wrote about road safety. I wrote about the crime does not pay serials. I even translated The Man of God, which was a serial of the prophets of God. And then after that, I thought there are great white men's stories which my people have never heard, except those people who had the privilege of having gone to the colleges, and that is Shakespeare.
To record the plays, Masinga got his former teaching colleagues to come into Durban on weekends to speak the parts he had prepared. They started with The Merchant of Venice in 1952. It was an immediate hit.
Oh, the people loved it a lot. The schools, the hospitals, the secondary schools and the high schools and the teachers felt as though it was a very good idea to teach Shylock in Zulu. Yep. Seeing that I had scored there, I thought of writing some more.
Over the next 3 years, Masinga undertook translations of Hamlet, King Lear, The Comedy of Errors, The Tempest, Macbeth, Romeo and Juliet, and Antony and Cleopatra. There are copies of the radio play scripts in the Johannesburg Public Library. These have been digitized and are available via the online platform Shakespeare ZA and the TCC's Sol Plaiki Archive of Shakespeare in African Languages. Only one known recording of Masinga's translations as performed on air remains, however, and that is the translator himself delivering Mark Antony's funeral oration in Julius Caesar. Friends, Romans, countrymen, is translated and, rather neatly, syntactically inverted to Zihlobo Bakwetu Maromani.
Zihlobo Bakwetu Maromani Aganingi Painle Be Gilapanje Uguzong Guaba Usiza Ha Uguzong Dumisa Ububi Abantu Abawenza Obesapida Buyasalela Emva Guabo Nomaseba Fa Ubuhle Nogulunga Guabo Ungwachwa na matambo abo, na kuyeke usiza ngithi makube njalo. Usenitshelile uBrutus oyiqhawe ukuthi usiza wayenezifiso eziyingozi. Impela uma kwakunjalo kwakuyingozi leyo. Usiza naye lokho wakuphendula njengobungozi bako. Ngilapha ke ngemvume kaBrutus. Oqotho oyiqhawe njengani nonke. Impela uBrutus ngumuntu oqotho. Ngizokhuluma emngcwabeni kaCaesar lapha.
Records suggest that Masinga's Julius Caesar was first broadcast in February 1955, the same month in which the Sophiatown forced removals commenced. There is a poignance and a sadness in this coincidence. And yet, as Sophia Town was hollowed out and began to disappear, its cultural and political significance seemed to grow. As I noted earlier, the phrase the Sophia Town era is commonly used to describe the period from the mid-1950s into the early 1960s. In other words, the period in which Sophia Town ceased to exist. But it permeated the wider city of Johannesburg. Gunner cites the vivid accounts by writers like Kantemba and Blok Modisane of being ordered by gangsters to recite Shakespeare to them on street corners. For a time, observes Gunner, quote, Shakespeare became part of the rhetoric of the streets. One of the favourite requests was for the revolutionary funeral oration by Mark Antony and Julius Caesar. Friends, Romans, countrymen. And she goes on to suggest that the popularity of Masinga's isiZulu radio play version initiated this phenomenon. This way of thinking about Julius Caesar's place in South Africa appeals to me more than John Carney's assertion that it is simply Shakespeare's African play. That's a subject for another podcast. There's no denying that the tension between opposing interpretations of Julius Caesar as a play that inspires revolutionaries and as a warning against the dangers of revolution resonated with black South Africans who were weighing up different responses to the increasing oppression of the apartheid state. But, as Masinga recalled years after his Shakespeare broadcasts, different plays were popular for different reasons.
The favourite for the schools was Julius Caesar. The favourite for the elite class of Johannesburg, town folks and Durban, was Romeo and Juliet. And Macbeth was the favourite of the rank and file of the Zulus.
Masinga's figurative use of rank and file reminds us that Macbeth is very much a martial play, and this serves as a neat segue into perhaps the most famous isiZulu Shakespeare of all. Welcome Msomi's Umabata, the so-called Zulu Macbeth, which has wowed audiences around the world since it was first performed in 1971. Here is Msomi in an interview with Associated Press, given when the show was being staged at the Globe Theatre in London in 2001, describing his Shakespearean inspiration.
So the more I looked and read Julius Caesar, Macbeth, I found that their similarities were there. It was a culture, you know, of a people who believed in traditions and customs. And also when you look at the intrigue and conspiracy, it was exactly the same as it happened in King Shaka's time.
Macbeth is often paired with Julius Caesar as a play that works in an African setting. That claim, too, needs to be unpacked. But perhaps we should first ask a question posed by the South African scholar Lawrence Wright. Is Umabata a Zulu play or a Shakespeare translation? When it premiered, it was billed as a Zulu drama on the theme of Macbeth. If we think of Umabata as a tradaptation, a translation and an adaptation, then we may not be concerned with accuracy or fidelity. One difficulty is that it's not just Shakespeare's play that is adapted. Umabata is framed as invoking the 19th century power struggles among the leaders of the Zulu people, but there is no neat historical fit. Mabata, the Macbeth figure, is not the famous King Shaka, nor is he Dingane, who became king after assassinating Shaka. Things are complicated by the fact that the Duncan figure in Umabata is called Dangane. Mabata's wife, the Lady Macbeth figure, is called Kamadonsela. There was a Kamadonsela in the era of Shaka and Dingane, known for her ambition, but she was not married to either of the kings. Umabata hews much more closely to Macbeth in terms of character and plot, and a number of key speeches are very closely patterned on those in Shakespeare's play. Yet, as the performance scholar Peter Kerwin points out, quote, to compare the two texts is to miss the significant elements of Umabata that make it extremely different to Macbeth. In many ways, the text of Umabata is a vehicle for communicating elements of Zulu cultural traditions to Western audiences that may not get much of a platform. Most notably, The play requires a large cast of dancers and musicians to create the visual and oral display of drumming and ritual dancing that pervades the play. The play text itself is not able to fully represent the sounds and colours of the cultural product that it is communicating, argues Kerwin. For most audience members, especially those outside of South Africa, Umabata is about spectacle, privileging, as Kerwin puts it, the aesthetic over the interpretive. Thuli Dumakude, who played Kamadonsela when Umabata toured the United States in the 1980s and subsequently directed the 2001 revival, emphasizes this approach.
We said we should think of television more than radio. So make it more visual for an audience to read what you're doing without having to really listen to the words themselves.
The problem is that the drumming and dancing spectacle feeds into Western perceptions about Africa, colonial stereotypes ranging from the so-called noble savage to the, quote, violent native. Thus, while the reception of Umabata in the UK and the US from the 1970s onwards was broadly shaped by anti-apartheid sentiment, it could be argued that, ironically, the show's success had the effect of reinforcing precisely those essentializing tribalist tropes that had been the basis of colonial and apartheid apologetics. Did this association continue into the post-apartheid period? Make what you will of this James Earl Jones-sounding voiceover in a marketing video for an international tour of the show at the turn of the millennium.
Umabata, the Zulu Macbeth. It is not the poetry of the language that creates the atmosphere here. It is the mesmeric sound of the drum and the pounding of the drilling feet. Changes in sound and movement which heighten the folk memory of passion, pain, and emotion. Melancholy becomes fresh-minted as the drums express a whole scale of various tonal colors corresponding to the finest variations in mood, giving contemporary relevance to chaos, that intense fear of disorder when destruction and violence take over. Shakespeare wrote Macbeth long before the repressive life of apartheid and the South African transition to freedom. But Macbeth is enduring art, perfect allegory for the human struggles against greed, ambition, and political fear. Umabata, the Zulu Macbeth.
The first post-apartheid revival of Umabata is a fascinating episode that centers, unsurprisingly, on Nelson Mandela, who was a great fan of the play. Here's the story from Msomi's perspective.
When I was in New York, and what happened is that Ted Koppel from Nightline asked me to create something South African because he was going to have an interview with Nelson Mandela. And I didn't care about the gig. What I wanted to do was to see Mandela. So I knew where he was going to come. So I stood somewhere at the Aaron Davis Hall, and I saw Mandela with Bamwini coming down, and all I wanted was just to raise my hand. And he stops. He looks at me. He says, "I know you. You are welcome. Saw me. Where is Umabata?" That I was so shocked that he knew anything about me. And then I said, immediately I said, "I'll revive it for you." And, of course, I had closed the show 10 years back. And and then he says, "When are you going back to South Africa?" And I said, "Now that you are out, I'll go back." So I told two lies. To revive Umabata, I wasn't going to do. You know, to go back to South Africa, I wasn't going to go back. But luckily, I came back to South Africa and ended up working with Mr. Mandela.
The late Shakespeare scholar Martin Orkin suggests that Mandela was not acting out of mere enthusiasm, however. He had a clear political strategy in mind. Mandela's suggestion, Orkin writes, came in the context of the complicated and recently bloody history of rivalry between the African National Congress and the Inkatha Freedom Party. The latter, founded in 1976 by Chief Mangosuthu Buthelezi, although claiming to be open to all South Africans, was promoting its own version of Zulu nationalism. In the 1990s, increasingly murderous violence between supporters of the Inkatha Freedom Party, sometimes working with the help of the apartheid police, who exploited what was seen as ethnic and separatist tendencies, and followers of the African National Congress, particularly in KwaZulu-Natal, threatened plans for a unified and democratic South Africa. Although, after emerging victorious from the South African general election of 1994, President Mandela had managed to persuade Buthelezi to join his cabinet, the dangerously divisive potential of followers of the Inkatha Freedom Party remained powerfully present throughout the 1990s, paralleling the potential dangers latent within the white South African right. In such conditions, Mandela's decision to recommend and promote a revival of Umabata bespeaks, before all else, a canny instance of his well-known advocation of reconciliation. Msomi's play did provide acknowledgement of Zulu history. At the same time, the depoliticized nature, so far as its original apartheid target location was concerned, of its translation of Macbeth, now proved newly convenient. Msomi's translation of Shakespeare's play into a relatively anodyne and antiquarian presentation of Zulu culture offered a blander nationalism than the particularly threatening kind that Buthelezi and the Inkatha Freedom Party were insisting on in their versions of Zulu history. End quote. For confirmation of this view, the benefits of what Orkin calls bland nationalism, one may turn to what Msomi himself said about the tone and intention of Umabata compared to Macbeth.
Shakespeare's Macbeth, it's more somber, it's more dreary, you know. But in Umabata, it's a celebration. It's a celebration of life, because in our culture, we celebrate life. And that is what I brought out in Umabata. And I think that is what I want people to go away with, celebrating a life of someone who made a contribution, you know, to his nation.
More recently, however, actors exploring Umabata have turned away from the militaristic or nationalistic emphasis on the big men of history and have focused instead on Kamadonsela. In 2020, just a few months before Msomi passed away, Yenzi Sithole and Amanda Seome gave new life to the playtext by bringing Kamadonsela's speeches to the screen. Instead of stage spectacle, drumming and dancing, their self-recorded monologues invite viewers to pay careful attention to the quietly terrifying words uttered by this Lady Macbeth. Sithole combined extracts from Scene 6 of Umabata, which is Act 1, Scene 5 of Macbeth. Lady Macbeth, Kamadonsela, receives the news of the witch's prophecy that her husband will become king, and then begins to plot the murder of Duncan, Dangane. She instructs Umabata to look like the innocent flower, but be the serpent under it.
Nayo uDangane uzohohoza nosiphele uma esefika la. Nikena utshwala thibukoma. Usifikela neyindaba ezimnani. Keke aliboni ilanga uDangane. Ubuso bakho Khondo ndifanisa nesibuko lapho kwazi ukuzibuka khona uma uhambisana nesikhathi, kanti ukwethuka kwakho ungakuqhakambisi. Ngibheze nje nomhlathi kuzokhaleza inyembe zenjabulo, kodwa ingaphakathi lakho ndifanisa nenyoka yona elindele ukugadla noma ngabe kunini. Phela uDangane usezilithile lapha kuthina. Thina nje kumele simlungiselele ngemfanelo. uchumaphele endleleni yethu entokozweni.
To focus the monologue on Kamadonsela's persuasion of her husband, Sithole cut the lines in which Lady Macbeth calls on the spirits that tend on mortal thoughts to take away her femininity and fill her instead with direst cruelty so that she may complete the deed. Fortunately, these are the lines chosen by Amanda Seome for her bilingual English isiZulu Lady Macbeth performance, submitted to the Shakespeare Society of Southern Africa's Lockdown Shakespeare Initiative. "Come," she whispers, "Wozani."
Wozani, wozani mimoya yobumnyama nonya. Ngivuleni ningiqaqa, ngingabi nenhliziyo ethambile yomfazi. Ngigcwalise inzondo nobulukhuni nonya enhlizweni yami. Yenzani, yenzani igazi lami lingahambi, alingabi nayo imigwaqo esiyabo.
If you'd like to watch the rest of Seome's performance, along with those of over 50 other South African actors depicting a range of Shakespeare characters, visit Lockdown Shakespeare's YouTube channel. In our next episode, Part 2, we'll continue to explore the work of contemporary translators and actors who are producing isiZulu Shakespeares. For now, let's conclude by returning to Yenzi Sithole's eerie performance as Kamadonsela tells Mabata that he is too gentle to catch the nearest way, that he needs to pursue greatness with swiftness and ambition, if he wants to be crowned as king.
Ungitshele nje Mabatha, yini umuntu angayizuza emhlabeni uma engasheshisi ngoba konke? Konke ngiyabona. Yebo khondo wami, lokho kufanele isiqu sakho. Fanele kube ngokwakho. Kungalinge nakancane nje kuze kuwele ezandleni zomunye ngoba kuthiwa. Oh, babize bonke abakithi abangasekho. Bangenze ngikwazi ukungena emzini yakho Mabatha. Kuthi konke ukwethuka kwakho. Abalaliswe bango yakho. Ngikubona. Ngikubona usuba inkosi. Mabatha.